What is up, you poor ghosts? Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. We are back with our December wildcard episode that we owed you. I know we owed you a wildcard from earlier. This brings us up to an even 52 episodes on the year. How about that? The ledger has no pictures.
Buzzer
beer. One a week. So this month, to celebrate the end of the year, there are a lot of year-in-review podcasts that were out and about right now. We thought we'd put a no-holds-barred spin on it.
Yeah, absolutely. So with this year, I think no matter where you fall in any sort of political outlook, you can agree that this year, in terms of mortality, was a rough one for celebrities and icons around the world. So we were talking about, what if we were to think about Shakespeare and beyond and these people who have passed over? Who can they now play?
That's right. They've been added to Shakespeare's ensemble at the stage door adjacent to the Pearly Gates.
Here we go. That's the name of the theater up there, is the Pearly Gate. We had the theater down here and the Globe. So now we just have the Pearly Gate.
All right. So let's take 10 of the dearly departed from this year and give them their first gig upstairs.
Here we go.
So, Dan, what we're going to do here, Dan and I in advance selected nine celebrities, performers this year.
Yep.
We are going to give them each their first role in The Great Beyond.
Yes.
We'll do 90 seconds each.
90-second-ish.
Sure.
A very no-holds-barred-ish on that.
Sure. And we were talking before the show, this is Fields of Dreams rules, so now that they've crossed over the pebbles, they get to be whatever age they want to be.
Right.
So we can revert them to any point of their careers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and is there anything else?
And then the 10th slot will be the person that we each feel was left off the list.
Of the initial nine.
Of the initial nine. And those will be in more of cameo roles. So it could be, we'll see how it plays out, but yeah. It could be the sort of thing where it may not be an actor, or it might be a performer in a smaller role.
Yeah.
So those are the things. We have agreed on the nine people that we'll be talking about, but we don't know what order we'll be doing it in. So
Dan, you won the coin flip before the show.
I certainly did.
How convenient. So you get to pick which of these celebrities we will talk about first, and yes. Then you get first crack at giving them their role. So Dan, take it away.
All right. So I will be starting with the late, great Gene Wilder, who was actually born Jerome Silberman in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He was born to Janae and William J. Silberman. Now, he changed his name to Gene Wilder because, quote, he could never see a Jerome Silberman playing Hamlet.
Huh.
So he later went on to say he could never see a Gene Wilder playing Hamlet. But I certainly could, and I will lead this off by casting Gene Wilder as Hamlet.
Interesting.
And I'll tell you why. I think that Hamlet too often is cast as a morose, like they lean really into the ennui without, there's a lot of comedy in there.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene Wilder is amazing at bringing comedic life to characters, but without compromising their strength.
Mm-hmm.
I think his antic disposition would be amazing to have seen. And I'm regretting not having ever seen this portrayal.
He also brings that sadness in.
Yeah.
You've seen Willy Wonka. There's a sad, or in Blazing Saddles, weirdly, there's some sadness.
The sadness is there without playing the sadness.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's the key to a good Hamlet. Yeah. I think when you just see someone like moping around for 4 hours, it feels like 8 hours.
Sure.
Whereas a tight Hamlet can feel like 4 minutes. And I think that Gene Wilder's would have and potentially would upstairs at the Pearly Gates.
Coming next year. I love, one of the things I always like the most about Gene Wilder's performances, and for me, it's mostly in Blazing Saddles and Willy Wonka, which I've seen the most times of his work. And then also that Woody Allen movie. Oh, there's a weird early Woody Allen movie that he has a cameo in.
Young Frankenstein?
He plays a sperm. No. Oh. Also Young Frankenstein. But it's his commitment, his dedication to the bit, even when cracking jokes, he'll kind of make the joke and then stare at you.
Right.
and he doesn't care if you get it or not, and you do. And he doesn't care about that either.
If he doesn't get the laugh, he'll get the bonus laugh.
Exactly. He gets the and one laughs quite frequently.
Awesome.
And so, I want to give him a clown. I want to give him a Robert Armin role, something that he can play with the words. And it came down to either Feste, which I think he could have done a great job with, but I'd rather see him play Touchstone
in
As You Like It. I think seeing him around Willy Wonka era Wilder, where he was really in his prime, dealing with two ingenues, and he's just so jaded and just so burnt out.
Right.
And like, I can't deal with this thing anymore. So fine, let's go, whatever. I would rather bear with you than bear you.
Right. I was just thinking, who do you think he's carrying around in that point?
Oh God.
Is that too much of a on the spot for this sort of bit?
Yeah. I don't know.
We'll come back to
that. Actually, we could come back to that. So I'll take my pick. Moving on to round number two, I may not be casting Celia, but I do have a Rosalind for you.
Oh, do you?
To go backwards into this.
Okay.
And that's going to be the very recently departed Carrie Fisher, who just went this morning. We're recording today. On Wednesday the 28th.
So it's actually yesterday.
On the 27th, yeah. Right. Yeah. Carrie Fisher. I think the best Rosalinds are... strong Rosalinds are Rosalinds who don't really, when the going gets tough, they're like, well, F this, let's get the hell out of here. I don't care.
Right.
It's like, you can't go into the woods. There are fugitives out there. And she's like, I got a blaster. Let's go.
Right.
You know? And it's like, she's not going to be intimidated being out there. She's going to, modern day Carrie Fisher probably wouldn't be willing to dress up as a boy, but Carrie Fisher in those circumstances may be like, yep. All right, I'll put on pants, but I'm not changing another goddamn thing about myself here. And, and I think I could picture, I don't know who the Celia is, but
right.
Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia era Carrie Fisher with Willy Wonka era Gene Wilder, and then the luckiest Celia in the world,
right?
Whoever that ends up being.
Printing paper with that production.
Exactly. So that's, that would be my Carrie Fisher, would be Rosalind in As You Like It.
Oh, wonderful. For Carrie Fisher, I have someone, I'm not sure that, sadly, and this is the beauty of The Great Beyond, I suppose, is I'm not sure that we ever got to see this era of Carrie Fisher, but I do think that there are so many people in this world who look at Carrie Fisher and go, this is the most powerful, most amazing woman to have ever lived. Mm-hmm. So I would be interested in a whole Star Wars-centric production of Antony and Cleopatra with Carrie Fisher as Cleopatra.
And then who's it with?
I'd have no idea.
Harrison Ford probably as her Antony?
Probably Harrison Ford, right? I mean, that makes the most sense.
Yeah.
And then just stack it up with all the Star Wars people in another production that prints a lot of paper.
Well, that's another episode. Coming to a wild card near you.
Right, you're taking care of so many things.
It's
tonight.
Funny because we've gotten a couple of, well, we'll come back to that later, but people keep asking us to cast the Star Trek universe, and it's like, we can't help you with that.
Star Wars.
No, I know.
Oh, Star Trek, we can cast them both. We have years of wild cards there.
Sure.
We just have to watch all of those things.
We have to watch Star Trek, yeah, sure.
But yeah, I just do think Cleopatra is as big as it gets. And for many people, Carrie Fisher is as big as it gets. I actually was lucky enough to see her one-woman show on Broadway a couple of years ago, and that was prior to ever seeing any of the Star Wars.
Okay.
So I didn't really even realize what I was seeing, and I couldn't quite figure out why everyone in line for the show was as amped as they were.
Uh-huh.
And now in retrospect, I'm like, whoa, I get to see someone like that perform live. And I think that's probably the effect that Cleopatra had on people,
I
had to guess. So
yeah.
Carrie Fisher, Cleopatra.
There you go.
So, looking at our list, even just looking at these names on paper, it's like, whoa, 2016, what the hell?
Right.
I'm going to go with this, I don't know, they all hit me pretty hard, some more than others, and this one hit me really hard, and that's Alan Rickman.
Okay.
Early in the year, who, again, I'm not sure, this is another one for me that we didn't probably get to see him get to this point in his life, and that's a robbery. But for me, it would be to see Alan Rickman's Lear.
Oh, wow.
I just think he has ridiculous raw talent. And again, this is another character. This is another artist who brings so much heart to the characters that he plays, but doesn't compromise on their spine. that, you know, his, I'm thinking specifically about Severus Snape.
Sure.
Who you look at and you go, what is this guy's deal? And he never tries to play a good guy and doesn't try to play a bad guy. He just plays a guy with conviction.
He plays the guy.
He plays the guy. And that to me is what you need to have a successful Lear.
Yeah.
Is someone who can just say, I believe what I'm saying and I don't care how that makes you feel.
Right. And it's what we always say about playing antagonists in Shakespeare, right?
Right.
They don't think they're bad guys. They have their, they do what they think is right, what is best for them.
Right. They're operating according to their code.
Yeah.
Also, I just feel like his incredible understanding of the human capacity. Mm-hmm. This is a role that you need someone, you need someone like Alan Rickman to play. It's not just like, oh, let me take a stab at Lear.
You're right.
And that's someone, and I think that when you look at Alan Rickman, it's like, you can't just be like, hey, Alan, how about we do Orlando, which is a great role.
Right.
But it's like, no, we're talking A-list, A-list, A-list.
Yeah.
Lear, Rickman, Rickman, Lear.
Sure. All right. It's funny that you mentioned his Snape, and I think it's something that Rickman's been great at throughout, whether it was that or like even the little thing he has in Love Actually or I think in Die Hard a little bit, but he's kind of a stretch in Die Hard. But he often plays the antagonist, but still you feel empathy for him.
Yeah.
You understand him because he creates such fully realized versions of these antagonists. So I wanted to find what I think is one of the more challenging antagonists to make empathetic that has flummoxed many actors. And that is Angelo in Measure for Measure.
Yeah, okay.
Because I feel like you really have to put on your hard hat and go mining for the empathy in that character without losing, you know, without just going against the text.
Right.
Right. You still need to play what Shakespeare wrote.
Ideally, that would be great.
That would be fantastic. I mean, you don't need to, based on some productions that we've seen.
Right.
We would, no holds barred, would prefer that you did.
Please, just read it in the text.
But I think he would be able to find something there that you would be like, I really don't get this.
Right.
Why you're doing this? No, that's not right. Why? Maybe it would be, I understand why he's doing this. Maybe that's the ultimate goal. Hmm. Like, I don't agree with this. This is disgusting, but...
Oh, I see.
I understand. Yeah.
Right.
So...
I can picture a world in which I may do that, even though it would compromise my beliefs.
Right.
But I... Okay.
I wouldn't do that, but I see why he would do it.
Got it.
Yeah. So that's where... That's how I would deploy Alan Rickman.
Is empathy one of the hardest things to play?
I wouldn't know. I've never felt it. To switch gears from a couple of, I mean, they're all downers because, you know, it's, I'll take it.
That's our first on-air point, by the way.
Count it.
Who knew it would be this episode?
Right. Prince passed this year. And if there was anyone who was more perfectly suited to play one of Shakespeare's more ephemeral characters, I don't know who it would be.
Yes.
Prince... had such a mystic presence. Like he refused to allow his interviews to be taped, so nobody really knew about him. There were all these legends about him. He had such a carriage and he could just come and go as he pleased and everyone would be like, holy crap.
Yes.
Prince just did that. And he was also a being of like pure sexual energy, particularly in the 80s in the Purple Rain era.
Yes.
That like Prince did very well for himself. He went too soon. But boy, did he make it count while he was here.
Right.
So I'm going to have Prince play Puck.
Oh, interesting.
Because I think as a being of raw sexuality, just picture Prince flitting through like, oh, I made the wrong people hook up.
Yep.
It's a shame. Guitar solo. Gone. Right. And it's like, and then, you know, Oberon is like, well, that's what happens when you send Prince.
Right.
Like, everybody's going to hook up.
Right.
Everybody parties at a Prince party. And also the music would be on point.
It would be 100% on point.
If a Puck is playing Prince. So that's what that's what Prince is playing. Purple Rain era Prince as Puck.
I mean, the purple flower is Purple Rain.
Oh my God, that's it.
Right?
It's and
right
that's there. Why I picked Prince to play Puck.
It's also a monosyllabic P word. Mm-hmm. Prince, Puck.
Perfect.
That's bisyllabic.
That's alliteration, but you're on the clock.
Poo-poo. So for Prince, I got nervous there. You may have seen my eyes light up because I thought we were going to go down the same path.
I did.
So for me, I agree with everything you're talking about with the ephemeral, mystic. Also, Prince had this beautiful service of others, but also made tremendous strides forward, I think, in a time where freedom for different people was being explored in many different communities,
sure.
which he appealed to and which he resonated with. So for me, it's Ariel from The Tempest.
Yep, sure.
In the same way that the music's going to be on point.
Uh-huh.
Prospero is just like, do this for me and then you can be free. And it's Prince being like, I'm free. I'll do it.
Don't you worry about me.
I'm going to flame amazement while I do it.
Right.
But I'm going to be free. And like, that's my noble master.
Totally.
You know, and I think Ariel is one of those characters that is listed. It's listed, I think, chronologically on the cast of characters low down with the other female characters.
Uh-huh.
And there are so many male actors that lust to play Ariel, myself yeah. included. And it's one of those characters, a lot of times when you go to see The Tempest, you're like, is it male or female?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also something that Prince is beautiful at, being like, I'm me.
Right.
I'm not male. I'm not female. I'm
right.
fucking Prince.
Yeah, right,
and
exactly.
I'm
going
to blow your mind right now.
Right.
So that's Prince, Ariel, in The Tempest.
I buy it.
I'm selling it, so that's great. That works out. I would like to move this conversation now towards our first non-actor on the list, but certainly someone who is an entertainer, someone who is an icon, and that is the late, most great Muhammad Ali.
The greatest.
The greatest, latest Muhammad Ali. And this one, I was trying to think about the world in which Muhammad Ali would inhabit.
Sure. Depends which character you're about to pick.
In the Shakespeare canon. And for me, that is from Titus Andronicus, Titus Andronicus.
Okay.
And what I would like to do in this production at the Pearly Gate is have it be kind of set in a wrestling ring. Or in the octagon, really.
Sure.
And it's MMA
uh-huh.
and kickboxers and wrestlers. And then it's Muhammad Ali.
Uh-huh.
Like, he had Parkinson's for 35 years.
Yeah.
Like, 10 years in.
Oh, so after, when he wasn't the greatest
when
anymore.
He wasn't the greatest, but he was just like, you're changing the sport. Like, I'm a legend. And I think that's what Titus is some man of honor.
So is this like Ali in like 82 when like he was, because his last five matches he lost. He
okay.
just, he stuck around and like lost to tomato cans because he just needed the money.
Oh.
And it's really sad to watch and probably was not great for the Parkinson's thing.
Probably not so
just
good
just get
now.
Punched in the head a bunch.
Right. So maybe it's a little earlier. Maybe it's like right at the crest of him being great.
Oh, so we're going back to him being awesome.
I guess I'm
going
to go back to like the last match he won because he comes in victorious.
Okay.
And then starts, like, he makes some bad decisions in the beginning of the play. Titus does. But he still is just like, the world is changing and what I do and I've done so well is no longer what you value. Now you want to see people bleed out and like get choked out. And that's just not what I do.
Right.
The Goths are taking over.
Right.
I just think it'd be really interesting. I think he embodied that code of honor
mm-hmm.
and that ability to be so iconic
yeah.
to so many people.
Yeah.
So
it's funny. Dan and I, before the show, were arguing about whether or not Muhammad Ali was an actor.
Yes.
And, you know, while he may not have like been in a movie, although maybe he was. No, maybe he.
There were movies about him.
There
was never in a movie
about him, but he was certainly a performer.
Yes, an entertainer.
An entertainer. You know, you look at those interviews he did with Howard Cosell where he would, like, pitch shows or, like, his whole performance art lead up to those first Joe Frazier fights where he would go to his, like, he brought a bus up to Joe Frazier's house and, like, did push-ups on his front lawn. Like,
he was a performance artist.
He was a performance artist who could also punch your goddamn head in.
I've met many who can do that. Not quite the same way,
sure,
but they would like to because they're all unhinged,
right? But with that, you know, not doubting that Muhammad Ali could have switched over into acting, one of the roles I would like to see him play is one of the, you know, someone who both talks smack and also later shows a little remorse, with which Ali was able to do but rarely had to do,
sure.
And also seeing him play that would be the draw of seeing him in this role. It would be Oliver in As You Like It. I've cast a lot of As You Like It in this.
What's going on with that?
It's in this season at the Pearly Gate.
Yeah, sure. Great. Liam Billingham is pumped right now. He's like, oh, great, one play. Perfect. This is what I've always wanted.
But I like Ali at the beginning, you know, when the Duke is like, he's your brother, you take care of him. He's like, I don't even like him, you know? And it's like, he's saying all the stuff he's going to do. And he's like, that scene that you always have where Oliver comes out and like pushes Orlando around, just like picture Ali like moving around, stuffing him into a corner. And then little plucky babyface Orlando saves him from a lion. And he's like,
right,
I'm on your side now.
This also actually explains why Orlando can beat Charles the Wrestler.
Right, because Muhammad Ali's been smacking him around for his entire life, so everybody's like, holy rat. Oh,
I didn't see that coming.
Right?
Belichick has drafted Orlando to be a linebacker for the Patriots, probably.
Exactly.
That's funny.
So, all right, so let's... there's one other non-actor on this list. And so let's go to him now, and that's going to be George Michael.
Also very recently.
Musician very recently passed, of Wham fame. And so for George Michael, you know, it's funny, a lot of 80s icons, not funny, it's, you know, a lot of these 80s icons of a revolution, of a moment, of a sexual revolution.
Yeah.
Are in this group. But I think one of the things that George Michael has that kind of differentiates himself from, you know, Prince and some of the other folks that we haven't gotten to yet, his style was so specific, like the George Michael style.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, he was before my time, really, but like, right, I still have a very vivid picture of what he brought to the table, which was kind of pirate-y, you know?
Sure.
The jangly earrings, the beard work.
Okay.
And you also, Dan now okay, sees where this is going.
Oh, okay.
So I would cast George Michael as Antonio in Twelfth Night.
I would laugh, but I'm chugging beer.
You're chugging two beers.
I was. That was pretty impressive.
You know, I think that, you know, George Michael as Antonio, especially the no holds barred interpretation of Antonio,
okay,
as evidenced by his police record. It's not, you know, it's not something that I'm pulling out of whole cloth.
Is that a powder? You just powder?
No. But also, you know, there's a degree of like, I could picture George Michael just like beating the hell out of somebody.
Yeah, of course.
You know, he had a danger that like, I couldn't picture Prince beating somebody up. Prince
could
have someone beat you up.
Oh, interesting. I see the difference.
George Michael could like take his crucifix earrings out and just beat you up.
Just
a little
take
bit.
It down.
I feel like I could see that.
Okay.
So yeah, I could see, and but also still tap into the rest of what you know, also have that open-ended love for Sebastian.
Yep.
So George Michael as Antonio.
Very good. Very good. I also had George Michael in our season in Twelfth Night, but in a different role. For me, George Michael is someone who I did not know a ton about. Admittedly, growing up, my parents listened to church music and Patsy Cline, mm-hmm, and I wasn't allowed to listen to music or watch MTV, really.
I did not know that until this moment.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
I mean, we had our thing.
Sure.
So there's a whole big blind spot on my whole cultural radar in terms of music from about 1955
to present
and before. It's like I got 1 year and I know the hymns at church by heart. I know all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Feste,
okay,
in Twelfth Night. And the reason why is, for me, it's from what I was reading about George Michael, he had a series of, he did very well when he was in Wham in terms of like courting women, but never really got close to them because he knew in his heart that he was, I mean, he said he was bisexual, but he knew in his heart that he was not bisexual.
Okay.
And it wasn't until he fell in love with a man. And I think that Twelfth Night itself is so much about identity, gender identity,
sure,
and sexual identity, that's really interesting in terms of the musician's role in that play.
Uh-huh.
And to pour all of that into the music,
uh-huh,
is something I hadn't really thought about. And actually, in preparing this, I saw Feste in a new way, which is interesting because I always see it in the way that I want to play it, as opposed to,
of course,
other options. Because I'm like, sure, oh, this is how it should be done. But if you think about a Feste, when you look at those scenes with Olivia, he's so close to Olivia. But it's in the scenes with Orsino that he's like, I hate you. And there's something more, not I hate you, but like, I would have,
it's more aggressive,
people of your constancy put to the sea. Thy mind is a very opal, all that stuff. It's like, what's going on there?
Interesting.
It might be interesting to see a Feste that is George Michael in, like, late 80s, where he's like, I know what I am, but I can't be what I am.
I can't be it here.
And then in Twelfth Night, that context of like, I can't be what I am is so on point that it just makes sense to have George Michael play Feste. And then like the music would also be
still
amazing.
On point. Lots of great musical productions coming at the Pearly Gate this season. Get your tickets now. Maybe not. Maybe we shouldn't recommend people to get those tickets now.
Yeah, right. Get it in like 4 days.
Well,
From here, I'd like to move over to the wonderful Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Mm-hmm.
Former Miss Hungary.
I did not know that.
Yes, Miss Hungary, not like I
like
want to
Hungry
eat all the
Jack's. Pies. Yeah, sponsor. No, like, yeah, sure.
Miss Hungary, like the country, Hungary. Sure. Also a noted socialite, and just this beautiful. She was married 9 times.
Wow.
The pictures of her are just. She's elegant, but also like classy and refined, but just undeniably sexy.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, she's Zsa Zsa Gabor,
right?
She died, I think, at 99 and is just, like, beautiful.
Right.
So I would actually like to see her Gertrude.
Okay.
Just to pile it onto Hamlet, where it's like...
Oh, that Gertrude is like MILF City?
Like MILF Universe, where it's like, okay.
Interesting. Yeah, I've never seen that.
That's my mom. Like,
wow.
Of course, my uncle killed my... father to be with her.
Right.
And there are like 6 people in this room who are already thinking about like, how can I be with Zsa Zsa Gabor?
Interesting.
How, and I also, and as a socialite, that the Gertrude's ability to, the relationships that she handles in the play are really interesting. And I'd be curious to see that in a socialite.
Sure. And it's almost like that turns the scene with her and Hamlet in the closet to like her being shocked, like the, if anybody, like Polonius finding out about this is going to ruin my social standing.
Right.
That you did this. It's going to like be in the tabloids.
Right.
You know.
And it colors Claudius with Rosgil, where she's like, no, I know all the names. No, that's Rosencrantz. This is Guildenstern.
Because she remembers everyone.
Because she knows everyone. That's interesting. She's just like, she's just perfect.
Yeah.
I think it'd be interesting to see what that does for her.
Sure.
I've just never seen a Gertrude played that way.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so I think she'd be great.
I like it. Zsa Zsa Gabor, I honestly don't know much about other than fleeting references from like Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous with Robin Leach that I watched when I was like 8.
Okay. Who wasn't watching that?
But what I did watch a lot more of, I mean, I was a big Ted DiBiase fan, so it like fit right into that.
Okay, great.
But what
I was
a
Teddy Ruxpin fan at 8.
DiBiase goes over Ruxpin, come on. But what I did see a lot of was her sister, Eva Gabor, in Green Acres. And one of the things that, you know, that was great in that was her, Eva Gabor's constant, like, just basically, same thing that I think you were just talking about, like the socialite in this context where it's like, why am I here?
Right.
Why is this happening? And I'm going to go out on a limb, you know, but I do know a lot of the great Zsa Zsa Gabor quotes about, like, I think there was a joke that she was like, I make a great housekeeper because every time I marry a man, I keep his house.
Right.
Like, so she was like...
9 houses.
Right. She knew the game.
Right.
And she knew how to play it. And, you know, tying into what you were saying about, like, her being very attractive as well and something that men are willing to... make rash decisions over.
Sure.
I'd like to see her play Catherine of France in Henry V.
Oh, interesting.
So when Henry V is trying to woo her, she's like, you are really bad at this.
Right.
I don't know what you're saying. Like, we're gonna get married.
It's a big house she gets. England.
She's a good housekeeper.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I know it's the wrong accent, but, you know.
Catherine of Hungary.
Sure. But, you know, just her being like... Henry is like all flummoxed. You see Henry being all flummoxed after this war, and he's trying to seduce Zsa Zsa Gabor,
right?
And she is not impressed.
That all, that's nice too, because it colors that whole sense of like, oh, Henry, can't, he can just win the war, but then he can't talk to a woman. It's like, it's Zsa Zsa Gabor.
It's a lot of woman for you to be talking to. Right. So that's what I would be going with there. So with Zsa Zsa off the board and all the other. We are done with the ladies of the original 9. We can finally get to the one that I actually had a crush on when I was a kid.
Oh.
And that's Florence Henderson of the Brady Bunch. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Mrs. Brady.
Of course.
Brady.
My apologies. I thought you were saying nope, because I thought you were saying we were done with the women.
No, there's one more. I have one here. Saved the best for last.
Of course.
Florence Henderson. And, you know, I think one of the things that Florence Henderson, not so much on the Brady Bunch, but in her career post-Brady Bunch, as she moved towards the end of her life, she really leaned into the projection of the perfect model housewife mm-hmm. that she had put in place on Housewife and Mom and, you know,
right.
That 70s woman on the Brady Bunch, and also being kind of a dirty bird on the back end and playing against that Mrs. Brady.
Excuse me? Dirty bird on the back end?
I said it.
Okay.
And I think that she could use both of those things in perfect concert as the nurse in Romeo and Juliet.
So interesting.
That she looks so wholesome and she looks so perfect and motherly, and then she's like, oh, I got up to some stuff. I've got some stories, but, you know, whatever. We'll get to that later.
Interesting.
So Carol Brady is the nurse in Romeo and Juliet, Florence Henderson. I'm in.
That is most intriguing, and I'll tell you why. Once again, we've come very close to getting the correct answer, but we're just inches apart. For me, I think Florence Henderson would be an incredible Lady Capulet.
Oh,
in Romeo and Juliet. For a lot of the same reasons, but taken in a different direction. I think that whole sense of, this was another one where putting the actor into the role changed the way that I thought about the play.
Okay.
And in thinking about, oh, wait a minute, what if we were to take Florence Henderson, like, in between shoots for the Brady Bunch?
So okay.
Go right back to there.
Straight era Brady Bunch.
Straight on it. Carol Brady by day, Lady Cap at night. Two times on Wednesdays, just killing it as Lady Capulet, to thrust that family drama into that era of, like, I have to be the good wife and talk to your father. Here comes your father. Tell him so yourself mm-hmm. is different than in a modern context where parental roles are shifting.
Sure.
I just think also the idea of Juliet Brady is kind of interesting. Like... What is Marcia Juliet? I don't know. I'd be interested to put the whole thing into that world, too.
Marcia.
But I was trying to think about, like, who is my favorite mother in the canon? And Gertrude jumped to mind, but I actually think Lady Capulet's a more interesting mother character. I don't know that she's a better mother. I think she's an interesting mother because of the nurse role. I mean, also, then you just cast the maid... on the Brady Bunch. What's her name?
Alice
as the nurse.
Yeah, I mean, right, that would be good. If I could get both of them, I would do that. That would work for
right?
me.
Right? So, I'm right.
All right. Oh, yes.
Oh, and rounding out the final nine, this is sort of poetic. We're ending with the person who left us the earliest in the calendar year, the incomparable David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
I would have chosen him earlier, but I knew that I was safe because you've already chosen my character for him.
That's funny. You've already chosen my character for him as well.
Interesting. Yeah. I wonder if we just have him reversed.
Probably.
Okay. I'm going to go with Puck from A Midsummer Night's Dream.
And who did you have Prince playing?
Ariel from The Tempest.
We have him flipped.
Okay.
That's right. They are of a type.
That's a type,
They are
right?
both very disappointed at the Pearly Gate auditions when they're like, you had to pick this year, huh?
Well... Couldn't I'll play up. Buck. You can play the Bay Ariel.
Right. Go ahead.
I guess for me, well, this is no holds barred, so I'm going to say it because I'm going to get yelled at by half people and others and be like, you're right. Puck's a better character than Ariel, so David Bowie, I'm taking you over Prince. I just think that, well, I mean, here's the thing. Who knows what David Bowie is up to? That's the thing, like the thing that I can't quite put my finger on. Is what was David Bowie doing? He can keep a secret. Is he chaotic? Is he good? Did he just make a mistake? That to me is Puck. That sense of like
okay.
childish stardust, literally from a different planet.
Uh-huh.
And in a world where it's just like, I descended, I came down, I did some things, I caused some chaos.
Uh-huh.
My heart was in a good place. I'm Robin Goodfellow.
Sure.
He is the magic man. He is...
Yeah.
As iconic as he's bigger than the thing, he's bigger than himself.
Uh-huh.
And Puck knows that he's part of something bigger and is just like
Sure.
Just mischievous.
Sure. So, yeah. All right. So my counterpoint is, and it's funny because these are the things that you mentioned for Prince, that, you know, both of these guys played with sexuality in their, especially in their primes. But I think Prince, while Prince exuded sex, David Bowie played more with androgyny. Like, Prince was more about, like, we are going to make love. Whereas David Bowie was like, where, you know, I don't need to land on your, I can fall on your spectrum wherever I want to fall.
Yeah.
And I feel like that ties more into what you were saying about Ariel on how he was listed lower with the, more towards the female roles. And like, is Puck going to be, I'm sorry, is Ariel going to be a man or a woman? Whereas Puck, that level of androgyny doesn't exist. Like, Puck is a guy. You know, like, let me rephrase that. You're right. Not necessarily. If Prince played Ariel.
Yes.
Ariel's a guy.
I don't think so. Not necessarily.
But I don't think that. And there's that degree of androgyny that I think, you know, that era David Bowie would bring that I would want to see in Ariel that I don't want to see in Puck.
Okay.
That raw sexuality, because I don't. Yeah. I mean, that's just what my. And again, I didn't, you know, I don't know that much about David Bowie. I know, you know, him singing Little Drummer Boy with Bing Crosby.
Sure.
Labyrinth.
Bing Crosby could be a great Oberon.
Oh.
In my casting of...
a great Lear. No.
Okay. Yes, he could be.
It's very late. A great Prospero.
Yeah, well, okay, they're similar.
Sweet. Fouled that one off.
Oh, too.
All right. Yeah, so that's an interesting question for you to get at us on Twitter.
I guess perfect.
Puck, Ariel, Prince, David Bowie.
Who got it right? Or are we both just idiots?
Who wore it better? Well, that's yes. You don't need to tell us
100%
that.
100% correct.
So now we're into the cameo round. So do we decide we want to do actors or do we want to do true cameos? I have one.
I have the same answer for both. So let's go with what's going to be the best bit for the next years to come.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take John Glenn passed away this year. John Glenn, the first American to enter orbit.
Yes. The drink with like the little bubbles in it?
The Worcester tap water? No. The orbit like outside of the Earth's atmosphere.
Oh.
John Glenn, definitely not an actor. Not even in the gray area of actors. Not like Muhammad Ali or any of these other guys.
Well, that depends if you believe the moon landing was staged or not.
He was not on the moon landing. He was just the first one into orbit.
Just missed.
Swing and a miss. But what I would like... So this would be an absolute... This is stunt casting at the pearly gate. Everyone's like, John Glenn got here. I heard he's going to be in the show. There's no way. And then he comes out. He gets a big pop.
Yep.
Five lines and he's gone.
Okay.
Is the sea captain in 12th
Night. Oh, great.
So he comes out. You know, our viol is like, what country friends is this? And he says, this is Illyria, lady. Whoa. With the implication being, I would know. I've been to the f***ing moon. I mean, he hasn't been. He's been to outer space. I've been to fucking outer space. Nice. You know, and then, like, literally, I'm sure he'd, like, wave at the crowd as he walked off after the scene. Like, total ham job.
Right. But just take three giant leaps off stage.
That was Neil Armstrong again.
Yes! Yes!
but that would be my non-actor cameo role, John Glenn as the sea captain in 12th Night.
Which would also feature George Michael as Feste and Antonio. In that same production in our season.
Yes.
Somehow.
It's a bold double cast.
Could that work? It might actually work.
We'll check the text.
Oh, wow. Did we just stumble upon something completely by accident?
It would be in tune with everything else we've ever done of any interest.
I think so. I don't know that they have any scenes together off the top of my head.
Mm.
That's most interesting. Anyway, back to the issue at hand.
I'll scratch that out so nobody else steals it. Right. Deleted. Bleeped.
Bleep. For my cameo, it would actually be Leonard Cohen, who is an amazing songwriter. And I would like for him to play Amiens in As You Like It.
All right.
And consequently underscore the entire show.
Of course.
And write the music for the whole show. I think for people who only have a passing knowledge of Leonard Cohen, it's probably Hallelujah, which I've heard played suddenly this year is now a Christmas carol. But
yeah,
I don't.
That's true.
Right? All of a sudden it's being played like in every Christmas mix. Different topic. But that song to me is about longing for love
uh-huh.
and the dangers that brings up. And that really, I've also always wanted to see an As You Like It that had a spine, that was more than just, I actually think the one in the park was really good at that.
Because it did have that.
It did. It wasn't just like fluff comedy, but it's like Leonard Cohen's music had this ache to it.
Sure.
Even though the
gravity.
Lyrics were beautiful,
yeah.
And it was somehow uplifting, and like the song Hallelujah made it to the soundtrack of Shrek.
Oh, God. With and Smash Mouth?
No, Rufus Wainwright. Who also?
No. I mean, Smash Mouth was also on the soundtrack of Shrek.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The original Shrek?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know.
Get that paper.
So
cash them checks.
I just think that his As You Like It would be beautiful. I mean, it might feature 80% of your answers
this
evening.
Cast Muhammad Ali. Imagine that green room. Muhammad Ali, Carrie Fisher, Leonard Cohen, Gene Wilder. That opening night party is going to be on fleek.
I would be there drinking the whistle pig, so to speak. So,
all right.
Leonard Cohen.
That's it. That's 2017.
2016.
We're on to 2017.
There we go.
Nailed it. Oh, my God. Well, it's been a rough one, both this episode
Kevin's
and
Kevin's currently
all
going.
Of it.
So I'll re-record this tomorrow and I'll include Kevin on this. And I'll have no idea how to edit it. So sorry in advance.
For those of you that are made it still downloading, thank you for making it through 2016 with us all 52 episodes. God. Should we do it again next year?
If we make it.
Knock on wood. For those of you that are still with us, thank you. Keep downloading. To keep in touch with us until next time, you can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/noholdsbarred. You can follow us on Twitter @noholdsbarredcast, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/noholdsbarredcast. So, on behalf of the Seven Stages Shakespeare Company, I'm Kevin Condardo.
And I'm Dan Boyer.
Happy 2017.
And f*** off 2016.